say. You're completely blank about this. What am I going to say to those people? Second, you jot down some notes from time to time, and as you keep jotting these notes, you develop a central idea or theme. The number of your notes multiplies, and as the deadline draws near, you suddenly realize you have about 10 times as much material as you actually need, and then you know you're going to have a job to organize this material, to eliminate and restrict. This is the real crux in writing, to restrict yourself. Often I think about the young ministerial candidate who graduated from the St. Louis Seminary in January and was assigned to Northern North Dakota. On the first Sunday, the Sunday of his installation, they had beautiful weather and he had a big congregation. But just before church time on the first Sunday, when he was to preach his introductory sermon, they had one of those storms for which Northern North Dakota is famous. And the people just don't get out. They've got good reason for this. They know what happens to roads and driveways, etc. But one parishioner did manage to show up. So the question was, should he conduct the service? He talked to this man for a little while and finally said, "Well, Pastor, I'm just a farmer. I'm not a very educated man, but it seems to me if I had a load of feed and one cow, I'd feed her." Well, he got the message, put on his vestments, and conducted a service, sang a hymn, had the prayers, the readings, another hymn before the sermon. He sang, the man joined in. He had the sermon, and he covered the field from Genesis to Revelation, from the doctrine of conversion to the doctrine of the resurrection of the dead, and cut loose for about 50 minutes. Then he took the collection himself and had another hymn, prayer, benediction, took off his vestments, came to the back, and, well, was it all right? The parishioner said, "Well, I'm just a farmer. I'm not very educated, but it seems to me if I had a load of feed and just one cow, I'll be danged if I'd feed her the whole load." Now that's spelled D-A-N-G-E-D, just in case the sound system isn't functioning properly. The real job in writing anything is to organize your material and to restrict yourself. Now, just by way of background and showing you that I'm just an ordinary fellow like yourself, I kept putting off this job of organizing and preparing my material till the last minute. That's typical of us fellows. And the time span for this narrowed itself down to Saturday afternoon between 1 to 5. If I didn't do it then, it wasn't going to get done. Come 1 o'clock, and it's a gorgeous day outside. It's the best weather we've had all week, and there's so much needed to be done outside. That's the outside. On the inside, there was Notre Dame versus Southern Cal in color at 1:30, and at 2:30 was the Missouri-Iowa game on this radio that he'd been talking about. But somehow, between matches of the score, the job got done. Call it pressure. I think you know something about pressure. Why read church papers? Well, for one thing, people lose a good deal if they don't read church papers. They tend to forget that they are part of a larger community. And just as you on this campus are members of a very fine and a very unique community, so members of a church are members of a larger community. And it's a worldwide community, a community that transcends all barriers and boundaries. Unless you read church papers, you don't realize that you're associated with people all over the world. And the trouble with many of our congregations is that they don't have this realization as a group. They're busy building private little empires, and they're not relating themselves to this fellowship we have together throughout the entire world. And just as congregations can get this way, isolated, cut off from this body of Christ, so individuals can lead very fragmentary Christian lives unless they read their church papers and remain in touch with their fellow members in the community. Unless you read church papers, you don't know what's going on in the church at large. You have a certain amount of this in the daily newspapers, the secular newspapers, but you don't get very much of it. The secular newspapers are in business to sell papers, and they're going to give people what they want to read, and so you get the hard news in your newspaper. The crash, the kill, the murder trial, the KKK investigation. People like to read about Frank Sinatra and Mia Farrow and Harry James and Betty Grable. This is the stuff they eat up, and this is the stuff they'll get in their papers. And so we need church papers, publications that tell us what's happening in the church. Tell us this in some depth. Interpret it for us. Unless you read church papers, you don't know the good things that people are doing. This just doesn't get into the newspaper. People would be bored if you had long stories every day about the good things that people do, the successful marriages and why their marriages are successful. But have a story about the Sunday school teacher who embezzled funds, or the elder pinched for reckless driving while he was under the influence, and you've got a real story. So unless you read the church papers, you don't know what's going on in the church at large, in your own particular fellowship. You don't know what the church is saying about the issues of the day, theological issues, current issues, Vietnam, the racial situation, the visit of the Pope, the Second Vatican Council, and so forth. If you want to know what church people are thinking, you want to read the letters column. Now, I have some letters here. I'd like to read them, but they're quite time-consuming. This is one thing I'd like to say for this afternoon, if anybody's interested. Let me just give you a sample. Please do not send any more issues of your Lutheran Witness, as my husband never reads them, and they make my blood boil. If you send any more of these hate magazines to our address, I will tear them into shreds as soon as they arrive. On the side, I should think God would be ashamed of you. On the bottom, I wouldn't go to your narrow-minded church if it were the last church on earth, etc., etc. We get some really interesting letters. That's just a sample. Of course, people who write are generally the people who have very strong feelings about things. And it appears that positive feelings don't come that strong, that people will sit down and write letters. That's why we have some of these other publications Dr. Neen talked about. The Lutheran Witness and the Lutheran Witness Reporter are what are called official publications of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We've got a little trouble with that word official, and there's a commission appointed to study the meaning and implications of this So whether we're going to know any more about it in 1967 than we do in 1965, we don't know, but we hope so. Well, sooner or later, you have to come to grips with this Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and decide for yourself just what it's going to mean to you. Since I do represent something of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, I thought I ought to say something about this. You have to have a relationship. You have to relate yourself to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You're either going to be positive about it or negative about it or apathetic about it. The hard fact is that when you are baptized, you become a member of the family of God, and you also become a member of the church in that place, and you also become a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I want to tell you right now that the biggest bottleneck we have in the Missouri Synod is the preacher. Whether it's publication program, whether it's finances, whether it's an evangelism program or a stewardship program, whether it's the LLL, whether it's the Walter League, no matter what it is, the bottleneck is going to be the preacher. And if we get 40 to 50% positive response in any kind of endeavor, this is considered good. You've got to get past the preacher. We'd accomplish far more in this synod, and we'd have far less disturbance if we could get a more positive and a more wholesome attitude toward sin. It's quite the vogue today to berate the church as an institution, institutionalized and organized religion. Institutionalized religion is more interested in preserving itself and perpetuating itself than in the work that needs to be done. The institutional church isn't getting out into the ghettos. It isn't working with the derelicts and the alcoholics. It isn't reaching the people it has to reach if it wants to be the church, because it's thinking too much about itself. Of course, the institutional church has its dangers and organized religion has its hazards, but we need organization. Don't forget in your vote sessions about organized religion that the other side of organization is chaos and it's anarchy. You've got to have organization. You've got to have institutions. So the current talk is about the death of the parish. That the congregational structure has outlived its usefulness. People in the congregation are talking to people in the congregation. They're communicating with each other. They're not communicating outside this structure. We have too many religious clubs, the story goes, and the trouble is that the number of these clubs isn't growing in relation to population growth, and so the parish has outlived its usefulness. Well, the congregation isn't living up to its potential, so what else is new? It's the best structure we've got, forgetting what God done. And until we develop something better, and until we make better use of this structure, we better live with it, and we better work with it, and we better give it everything we've got. And the same thing applies to the sinner. It's the best thing we've got for getting the job done. no room in this organization for the cynic. And there's no room in it for the chronic and confirmed dissenter. We're a democratic institution. We are meeting now every 2 years. And all the resolutions, all the decisions, all the positions of the church are subject to review. If anybody disagrees, he is duty bound to register his protest and he'll have a hearing. It becomes us to take a positive view toward this fellowship we belong to, for we're banded together in Christian love to do Christ's work. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has something of an image on the American scene. It's a force to be reckoned with. There's no neutrality about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You're for it or you're against it. Now, when I use the word image, I'm conscious of getting over into an area where somebody may think you're trying to be an expert, image makers, image analysis. I think back to the time when psychology was just emerging, you might say, and everybody who claimed to be a psychologist or know anything about psychology was rather suspect. The Reader's Digest back there had an anecdote about a graduate degree in psychology, major in psychology. He was trying to sell himself to the president of a large industry, trying to show him that he would be valuable as a consultant in employment. "Will you give me a minute?" The president said, "Sure." So he went out into the general office and he got three secretaries, brought them into the office, had them sit on chairs, and said, "I want to do a psychological test here. I want to ask you just a simple little question." So he said, "How much is 2 and 2? First girl said, 4. The second girl said, 5. The third girl said, "Well, it could be 4 and it could be 5. He said, "All right, girl, thank you very much. That's all I need you for." So he turned to the president and said, "Now, on the basis of this very simple little test, I can tell you a lot about those three girls. The first one answered 4. She's accurate. She's precise. The kind of girl that you can rely on. She has a highly developed sense of responsibility. The second girl said 5. Well, she smells rats. She's cagey. She's going to be on the lookout for you. Nobody's going to pull the wool over her eyes. Now you take the third girl. She said it could be 4, it could be 5. Here's a girl who's flexible, adaptable. She knows there's more than one way of getting that thing. She's a very resourceful young woman. Now, sir, on the basis of this simple psychological test, which of the girls do you think you'd hire?" The president thought a minute. He stroked his chin. He said, "You know, I think I'd go for that blonde with the blue eyes." When you talk about image, you're talking about one of these elusive things. It's like competing with a blonde with a blue eyes. But I think we can say that the Missouri Synod does have an image on the American scene. We're known as the Church of the Lutheran Hour. This is the lie. This is no accident. These programs are under constant review and analysis. We've been when you get to a synodical convention, it's amazing to see how this network really operates and how our men have contacts with the press. We have good rapport with the press. We get a good press. We've got a good standing through our PR department. We've got a good image through some of our personalities. As you look at the publications of other churches, how often the names of Ozzy Huffman, Martin Marty, Jerry Pelletan come up. This recent issue of Saturday Review that featured Albert Schweitzer. Schweitzer as a theologian was discussed by Jerry Pelletan. We've got other names. I think of the Kretzmans. I could go on. In every area, there are people who have given the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod a good image. We have a good image in architecture. I need hardly tell you that the senior college was way ahead of its time. This architecture, this concept, it won wide acclaim. So did Memorial Chapel and Valpo. All over the land, we have churches called bold, daring, progressive. Missouri Synod people aren't afraid to experiment. They're not in the rut. We're known for our synodical training system. We're known for our elementary and high school education. Who else among Protestants has a chain or network of Lutheran high schools as we have them? Our educational materials, Sunday school, vacation Bible school, Bible classes. You'd be amazed how much of this stuff is going to other church bodies. Concordia Publishing House, though St. Louis is an industrial empire, is the second largest customer of the post office. These educational curricular materials and books and tracts and so forth are going into all the world. We're producing a tremendous amount of material for Christians of many persuasions. Our members on the whole are well informed, well indoctrinated. They perform well in evangelism and in stewardship. As a matter of fact, our people are the envy of other denominations. Unfortunately, there's so much accent on not making the budget all the time that we forget the wonderful job our Christians are doing in this department of stewardship. Talk to a German minister, for example, and uniquely a woman pastor. That's almost a dirty word in our term. Since we had a picture of a woman pastor in the Lutheran Witness Reporter, how dare you print a picture of a woman pastor? She has been under the state good in it. We've got a church body of which we can be really proud. And we're in a good condition. Don't let anybody tell you different. We're in a good condition. We're in a sound condition. We're growing. We're growing externally and we're growing internally. And we've got to meet troubles and troubles because we're growing. And we're growing in our theological understanding and in our ability to relate the gospel of Jesus Christ to the man of today. Editors of the Lutheran Witness and the Lutheran Witness Reporter have a job to do for this sinner, and it breaks down really in three. people don't understand us, they don't sympathize with us. Some publications copy our articles, some publications photostat our articles. Now, we appreciate the publicity. It's unfortunate that when they're photostatted, they're reduced. Some, I think, could be blown up a little bit, and maybe some people who need to do some reading might read them. We regret, of course, that a publication has got nothing to do but carp. This must be hard work. Nothing to do but cut and paste and carp. And I suppose if all the problems that they're carping about were solved, there wouldn't be any publication. That would be tough. Now then, why did we go to the newspaper? Well, a magazine has limitations. We're on the blanket plan. This has been one of our strengths, namely that congregations will get a blanket subscription or a district will get a blanket subscription. And people get this magazine from the congregation. And this is a real handicap when you get a magazine without paying for it. I'm telling you. I know. I subscribe to U.S. News and World Report, Time, and a couple of others, and after I write out the checks for these magazines, I am going to make it my business to read them and get my money's worth. But I also get a couple of magazines, Friends, for example, from General Motors. This doesn't cost me anything. I seldom read this thing. And it's the same way with The Witness coming to many homes. They don't pay for it. They don't read it. They haven't invested in it. It's a gratuity. We did a survey some time ago, and incidentally, Dr. Sommerfeld and your faculty was the key man in this survey, a very intense survey, which showed that only about 25 to 30% of the people were actually opening this magazine and reading it. Now, they tell us this is a little low. You could up that a little to 40 or 50. I don't care. Even if you up it to 40 or 50, there are still 50 or 60% of the people who are not reading the church paper. Magazine is something that you can put aside and read later. It doesn't have any sense of immediacy or urgency about it. And you know what happens? The thing you put aside to read later, often it doesn't get read. So we decided to go into the newspaper format. Here's something the American people understand. They read on the run. They read on the bus. They read at breakfast. They read during lunch. Or they read a little after supper before they look at TV. They're reading on the run. The newspaper is designed for rapid reading. The American people spend very little time with their newspapers. It doesn't average more than 17 or 8 minutes. But the American people are the best informed people in the world because they can read the headline and know what's happening. They can read the lead paragraph of important stories and get a summary. If they want to read more, they can read. That's the way it's written. It tapers down. The most insignificant details are in the end. The important things are high in the story. They're on top. So we decided that since we have a mass audience, as said before, the magazine is keeping its place and developing a message. It's articulating the faith. It's promoting the work of the church. It's interpreting issues of the day for the person who will read this. And we see a growing number of young people, college people. But the newspaper is designed to reach this great bulk of people. You can't count on loyalty to the church. You've got to trap them. You've got to arrest them. We hope that by putting out a newspaper that tells them what's going on in headlines and in lead paragraphs and introduces features and columns illustrated with pictures, we hope we're going to cultivate this habit of picking up this publication and looking at it and reading it. So far, we've had good results, even though it's been a price increase. And when you're in a congregation with, let's say, 200 subscriptions, and it's costing you $1.50, that's $350. This price goes up 50 cents. And from $350, this gets to be $400. This is quite a jump in the budget. And though we've had to face this, we've had some growth. And when you reach the saturation point, growth is difficult. We've got a network of reporters, our district edition editors. We've got PR people out in the field. That's why I say, I hope you'll keep this in mind and aspire to be a PR person. It's a fascinating job. It's good training. And you have the potential of becoming a reporter, a contributor to both the Witness and the Lutheran Witness Reporter. The thing of the future, we believe, is a weekly paper, because you get first-class delivery. Our handicap now is that it's taking up to 10 and 12 days to reach some of our subscribers. And it gets stopped at the first point. It gets stopped at the distribution center. There's the big roadblock. And then, of course, at the post office delivery. And because it's not first-class material, each point of processing has the privilege of holding it 48 hours. So the weekly newspaper would get first-class treatment. We'd get to people within 4 or 5 days of press time. And just to give you a little further look, on the horizon seems to be a newspaper which is a wraparound for megalopolitan Lutheran paper. Very easily, you can break this center down into about 23 to 25 megalopolitan areas. And the Church of the Future is very likely going to be administered and going to be doing its work around these megalopolitan areas. Try to say that sometime. Our ultimate goal then is a weekly newspaper, a monthly magazine, and a journal for the professional people of the church. This is our ultimate goal. Now, I'd like to say two things in conclusion. Any questions that you have about the editorial process or editorial problems or what's a good story, how do you judge, and so forth, you're welcome to ask the question. Two things I want to emphasize. One, the importance of communicating. As said, you're not too far from the ministry. As a matter of fact, in a very real sense, you're participating in some of its aspects now. Your central subject is the Word of God, and other subjects as they relate to it. But don't undersell the importance of writing. Writing is still the basis for communication. Whether it's drama, theater, radio, television, no matter what it is, your basis is still the written word. Watch some of the credits sometimes on some of these big name shows like Danny Kaye and Red Skelton and Bob Hope. Watch the credits down the bottom. You'll always find 7 or 8 or 9 writers. Without these writers, there just wouldn't be a show. Now, people on television know it. And I think we're getting to know it in the church. You can know Greek and Hebrew and Latin and philology and archaeology and sociology and physiology and everything can't communicate it, if you can't put it across to people, what good is it? I'd like to put in a plug for the people in here. Unconsciously, somebody was remarking there was a commercial for Hebrew in the devotion this morning. Boy, English, grammar, literacy, composition, everything related to it. Get all you can, because from here on in, you're just getting yourself into a lot of ruts. And you're getting to be confirmed in these ruts. This is a real good time to absorb everything you can about communicating properly and effectively. And then finally, there's another kind of communicating we must do. If we don't do it without it, without this other kind, our words won't make an impact. Recently, there was a survey in a Midwestern city as to which Christian denomination was really doing a Christian job. Which Christian denomination impresses you as coming closest to the Christian ideal? This was a strong Roman Catholic community, a lot of Methodists and Baptists, a very strong Lutheran community, but they didn't make it. Who was number one? Salvation Army. A real surprise. Here's a group, certainly not in the main line, less than 100 years old. I think they started in 1878. And yet the Salvation Army, in a substantial sampling taken, impressed people as coming closest to the Christian ideal. Why is it the Salvation Army is there when there are people in need? They're there for the fire, the flood, the earthquake, the tornado. They were there in the war. I had about 50 members in World War II, and just about everyone who came back raved about the Salvation Army. They were always there, and they always gave. They never sold you anything. They always gave. The Salvation Army is wherever people are in need. Homeless men, the derelicts, deprived and neglected children, unwed mothers, prisoners, parolees. They're always there serving. Don't Lutherans do this sort of thing? Sure they do. They've got highly developed welfare and institutional programs, deaconess training, etc., etc. But the work we do is done mostly through agencies. We do it by proxy. Relatively few Lutheran people are involved in this kind of work. I'm glad to know from things that I have read that the, what do you call them now, co-curricular activities or what have you, include this sort of work, that you're participating in this type of ministry now, working with underprivileged and deprived children, people of minority groups. This is wonderful. Because if you identify yourself with these people who are outside these clubs, if you are identifying yourself with these people as Jesus Christ identified himself with the poor, the maimed, the halt, the outcast, the lepers, then when you communicate verbally, you're going to identify with people. And so I say more power to you. We hope we can contribute something to this ministry of yours, this communicating you're going to do. And we hope we can look forward to you as participants and contributors.